We'll hear the fourth case today, Kanto against Holder. Mr. Tenbrock.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, James Tenbrock on behalf of the petitioner. This case involves an appeal from the Board of Immigration Appeals. Mr. Kanto is currently petitioner, and he was convicted in 1983 of two counterfeiting offenses when he was 24 years old. He's now 49, maybe even almost 50. He was given an 18-month sentence and served with a notice to appear by Department of Homeland Security in June of 2005 after he was returning from traveling abroad. Since his conviction was prior to IRA-IRA, and further since he was no longer eligible for relief under Cancellation or Removal 240A, because his crime was characterized as an aggravated felony, he sought relief under 212C, which was the former law prior to IRA-IRA.
It would help if you avoided unpronounceable acronyms. Just call it the 1996 Act.
Okay. The immigration judge and the board rejected his assertion that under Sincere, it was impermissibly retroactive to find him not eligible for the 212C relief. And there's two main arguments that we're making. The first is that it's impermissible to characterize the offense as an aggravated felony because it's an unequal application of the laws with respect to the definition of an aggravated felony, because in the definition, Congress has provided that if an offense is 15 years or older and it is a foreign conviction, then it would not count as an aggravated felony. But apparently for a United States conviction, any sort of time period does not apply. Now, there is a case out of this circuit in which this was addressed, albeit in a different context. It was a sentencing context. And in that case, I believe the Seventh Circuit found that there is some sense in making a distinction between a foreign conviction and a U.S.-based conviction. And what I have asserted, and consistent with a recent dissenting opinion in the case of Small versus United States.
Your problem, of course, is that we follow the majority of the Supreme Court rather than the dissent. I mean, where does one go saying, I'm relying on a dissent, when the majority of the Supreme Court itself held that there has to be a difference between domestic and foreign convictions? You don't want us to hold that the Supreme Court of the United States is unconstitutional, do you?
No, but I think that the argument ought to be taken seriously, and that it's not as if there's nothing out there on this. There are some people who are considering the fact that a foreign conviction, you know, should not be any different than a U.S. conviction. And especially in this instance where Congress has made no distinction between any sort of foreign convictions. I mean, a foreign conviction can arise out of Canada, it could arise out of Great Britain, and at the same time, Congress has said those convictions don't carry the same weight as a U.S. conviction. So, in my view, that would constitute an unequal protection of the laws. Because this offense is about 26 years old, and it seems unfair that it would be applied to him now, or the application of aggravated felony would be applied to him now.
So you would like us to give the same weight to do the same time period, but don't you think part of the rationale of the statute is that we may not be familiar and are not familiar without how foreign law is, what the conviction means. And also, don't we have an interest that when people come into the U.S., I mean, there's a, you know, if you commit a crime here, we know what our justice system is. We know what it means. We know the impact of it. We don't have any of that familiarity with foreign law. I mean, there are some, there is a rationale for the difference.
Well, I suppose there's, but that rationale is certainly under question if you're considering that the convictions may arise out of common law jurisdictions similar, or common law countries similar to the United States, as a matter of fact.
Well, but the justice system in Canada, that differs from what it might be in Botswana, and it might be different in Laos, and each system has its own rights and protections, and Congress may not have wanted to prevent an alien from seeking a waiver because of a foreign conviction based on different laws without having, you know.
Well, Congress has put a conviction out of Botswana and those other countries in the same basket as a conviction out of Great Britain and Canada.
Right.
So,
right.
And that's
exactly.
And that's that.
But
does,
I mean, there are other countries that are not common law countries. They would still be treated the same.
No, I understand that. But if Congress is making a distinction that's unreasonable insofar as it includes the these countries that have common law jurisdiction. Now, with respect to the second
argument,
we have a very hard time dealing with the European Union if we were to announce a principle that we. Our Constitution compels us to give different treatment to countries with common law jurisdictions and countries with civil law jurisdictions.
Well, I believe Congress can make whatever distinctions they want. And I think, you know, I think here when you're looking at a conviction that's this old, that it would make sense to make some sort of further distinctions.
And you think, you know, federal courts would be in a position to do that, to have to look at each conviction, research foreign law, try to find the case law. I mean, there's some countries in Africa where you can't even get online to get the case law. I mean, it, you know, it's just not realistic.
Well, I think that your point sort of underscores my point. Why should there be a distinction between
let me throw out, address the second part of my question, that Congress might have felt that an alien who committed a crime in this country forfeited his right to be here because it shows a lack of respect for U.S. law. You know, whereas, you know, if there's a conviction in another country, you know, that's a whole different thing. You know, the alien comes here in our country, commits a crime, we're familiar with it. You know, couldn't that be a rationale?
Well,
whereas we can't look into that if they have a foreign conviction.
If an aggravated felony is considered to be a serious offense, I would not think that this court should make any distinction between a serious offense here and a serious offense in another country. I mean, what you are trying to say is that
what you think is not relevant. It's what Congress thinks that's relevant. Your argument is that no sensible person could think as Congress did, and therefore the law is irrational. But why could no sensible person think that?
Well, I like the way you framed that. And the point is that thrown into that basket is other jurisdictions that should have as much weight as the United States has in terms of the conviction and weight of the conviction, then it doesn't make sense. That's the problem. I mean, right, it does make sense that, well, we don't want to deal with trying to figure out whether a conviction out of some, country in East Asia or Africa is actually a real conviction, so we're going to not give it as much weight. I mean, that makes some sense. But when you throw it all in the same basket with convictions out of Great Britain and Canada, then all of a sudden it doesn't make sense. Well, I guess I'm going to save my rest of my comments for my rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. I think you have about 20 seconds. Ms. Sherman.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jessica Sherman on behalf of the respondent, Eric Holder. Mr. Canto is inadmissible to the United States based on his criminal convictions by jury trial for two counts of counterfeiting. He does not challenge this finding, that this finding is a crime involving moral turpitude or an aggravated felony that render him inadmissible to the United States. Instead, he sought two separate waivers of inadmissibility under 212H and 212C. He raises two challenges to the denial of these applications. First, with regard to his 212H application, he's challenging the constitutionality of the INA as written. But as Your Honors pointed out, he hasn't shown that Congress had no rational basis in distinguishing between the two types of convictions. With regard to his 212C waiver, it appears that petitioner has waived review of that decision. He's not challenging it at argument. But also, his arguments that were raised in his opening brief are foreclosed by this Court's precedent. Turning to his application for 212H relief, in order to succeed on an equal protection violation, he has to show that there was no plausible or conceivable reason for the distinction between the two types of convictions. And he's failed to meet that burden here. As Your Honors have pointed out, there's several plausible reasons that Congress chose to distinguish between foreign and domestic convictions. So simply, he can't meet his burden of showing that there's no plausible explanation. And as this Court recognized in Gonzales, which arose in the federal sentencing guidelines context, one plausible reason is that we have different constitutional guarantees. Another plausible reason is that the Congress might have deemed it more serious to violate U.S. law when you're seeking a benefit in the United States than to violate foreign law. He hasn't rejected these plausible reasons. He hasn't shown that they're irrational, wholly irrational, which is required by this Court's law. Quickly, with regard to his application for 212C, this Court has held it's only impermissibly retroactive in two situations, and it's consistent with Supreme Court precedent. The two situations are when an alien has conceded deportability prior to ARRERA, and the second situation is when an alien...
I have the same suggestion. Instead of unpronounceable acronyms...
Since the 1996...
...words would be a help to judges who are not specialists in immigration law.
Okay. Well, the two situations are when an alien conceded deportability prior to the 1996 amendments. That's not at issue here. The second situation is when an alien pled guilty to the underlying offense before the amendments. And Mr. Canto did not plead guilty. He went to jury trial, and this Court's decision in Montenegro that therefore forecloses his arguments regarding 212C. Are there any questions from the panel?
Doesn't look like it. Thank you, Ms. Sherman.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Tenbrock? You'll have to talk very fast.
I did not waive my argument for the impermissible application of the 96 law. Just a quick comment, I suppose, at this point. The way I see it, the main case on this is the Landgraf case with respect to whether or not a court should deem something impermissibly retroactive or not. And it seems that a number of principles have come from that decision as well as following decisions. The first is whether it would, quote-unquote, impair rights of a party possessed...
Counsel.
All right, never mind. Okay.
The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.